This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour, Brock and Salk, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Love to see you guys on the phones here. What'd you learn about the Seahawks this weekend? 206-421-3776, or maybe the NFL in general. How many links? We got like a million of ours here, Brock. Things that we found that we learned this weekend. You guys only need to have one, but we want to hear from you guys, so it's not just us jammering back and forth. Let's all do this together, right? What did we learn this weekend? All right, here's the first thing I learned. 206-421-3776. I learned there's a lot of fans with a real quick trigger on Russell Wilson. Like, real quick. And I know it's just Twitter, so it's easy to say mean things and just kind of never be held accountable for whatever. Like, Hot Takes Exposed doesn't come after every fan. Thank God. Like, not everyone has to answer for their comments. But, jeesh, I can't believe after, what is it now, 7 years, that people still have that quick of a trigger on Russell Wilson.
Yeah. You think it's because of the bar he set? Bob Grimes and Tom were talking about this a little bit yesterday. And they all said, hey, Russell didn't play well. And they didn't, not Russell didn't play well compared to Josh Allen or compared to Matthew Stafford or even Matt Ryan or any of those other guys. It's not about when you're at his level, about any of those other guys. It's simply about your bar. It's about your game and knowing what Russell is capable of doing. And if you kind of set that bar there, then yeah, he didn't play poorly, in my estimation. He just didn't play elite. And I think because the expectations are so high, I think because of what he's going to be asking more for, Mike, in 4 or 5 months of being a $30 million man and how that handicaps your team, there's so much more that comes with it.
He didn't play all that well.
Right.
It's just going to help when you go through the negotiations coming up.
Sure.
It's good news.
You think there's a little bit more of just frustration with him personally that he gets attacked?
No.
That it's not just you think this is 1,000% professional?
Yes.
You don't think there's any personal stuff the guy does too much? He's too connected in these ways.
I don't think it was a significant factor. I just think people get frustrated. And Russell does it differently. And so when it works, he's the most miraculous person in the world. When it works, he's the wizard. When it doesn't, it doesn't look like everyone else. Well, there's a lot of criticism.
I'll play off this.
The wizard, as I like to call him.
Yeah, I'll play off this just a little bit. Because Pete was interesting. I hadn't thought about it the way that Pete framed it yesterday. Not making an excuse. Again, not making an excuse here for Russell. But the way that Pete framed it of, you know, it was a real mixed bag of protection. And I actually thought about a pitcher, because many times my analogy is now more baseball to football. It becomes about a pitcher and a quarterback. There's a lot of similarities between the two. And a pitcher wants what? A consistent strike zone. If you're going to give me that pitch in the first, I got to have it in the third. I got to have it in the fifth. If you call it a ball in the first inning, I got it. But I've got to have consistency to know how to attack.
Yeah.
And Pete's saying with Russell, having that choppy nature of protection where there were times he had 5 seconds and times he had half a second for him wasn't, you know, maybe the best thing that a wizard needs to know kind of what he's up against.
206-421-3776. Jake's in Zilla. Jake.
Ooh, I like Zilla.
Jake, give me one thing you learned this weekend.
Well, I don't know. I didn't necessarily learn something, but I realized that over watching Wilson the past 6 or 7 years, that takes him 4 to 5 games to get going every season, so I'm not too worried about it. But
he's like Kyle Seager.
Kind of like Kyle Seager.
Hopefully
like,
not this year's version.
No.
Or last year.
Last year he started slow, and then what came out the Houston game, I think, had 400 yards and 4 touchdowns, and then took off after that, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So
you think it's a Russell thing in that way, or is Danny O'Neill wrote about it? It's just a Seahawk team thing in that way.
Could be both, because I mean, except for 2013, they started slow every season. I think started 1-1, 2-1, 1-2,
Chicken
or is it like what the professor said earlier? It's just that, I was listening to his Bradley McDougald interview. Is it just that people don't have enough time anymore with the new rules and the collective bargaining agreement? You just don't have enough time to practice.
Could be.
Well, I'll continue to land on this and feel pretty strongly about it. That Russell needs trust with people on the other end of his routes more than any QB in this league. Hmm. Because, as John Clayton said, he's 5'10 and 5'8", that there are simply lanes and opportunities that he doesn't see. And you know what? When he throws to Doug and he throws to Jermaine and he throws to those guys, man, that ball is out. It's out because he could trust that they would be exactly where they were supposed to be. Throwing to Jerron Brown, throwing to David Moore, throwing to unknowns, Keenan Reynolds, if he fills in for Doug, it's just not going to have the same level
of anticipation. Do you think he'll feel like Keenan Reynolds is a known commodity because he's so much like that?
He should just wear Doug's jersey.
All right. Give me one of yours. We got to go quicker. We're wasting time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's go.
I learned that the preseason looks, sounds, feels, and hits nothing like the regular season. And I knew that, but it's amplified now because the regulars don't even play in the preseason. That the Shaquem Griffins and Rasheem Greens, it's awesome. You know, these rookies that just flash in the preseason, it's played at 80%. Even the third preseason game in Minnesota that I was at, it's played at 80%. And the octane is just so much higher come regular season time. And then, oh, by the way, primetime games like last night, it just seemed like that Raiders-Rams game was flying, man. It's just flying. The Sunday night game with Aaron Rodgers and those guys and the Bears, Khalil Mack, just flying. So I think it's just probably even exaggerated with how slow the preseason is without a lot of starters playing in it. That's what I learned.
206-421-3776. You guys can be a part of this. Things we learned this weekend. I learned the Seahawks still need to prove that they're a tough physical team and want to run the ball.
Okay, I got my numbers right here.
They need to prove it.
I was doing a lot of homework.
You're looking
at
the other teams. I don't care about them.
16 games in the NFL opening weekend. 75% of the time, the team that ran more won. The four outliers are going to be New England, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Excuse me, Aaron Rodgers was the biggest deficit. The outliers are going to be New England, going to be Tyrod Taylor, Tyrod Taylor, because he runs around. Actually, San Diego.
They didn't win.
Yeah, these.
They tied.
Correct. That was kind of a hard one to judge. So I guess it's even more than 75% of the time. If you run outrush your opponent, right, as in every playoff game last year, you win.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't prove it to me. And I appreciate what Pete says, that they didn't get a lot of opportunity. He's right. They didn't. But they also didn't take advantage of the opportunities that they had. And
okay, before
and
you yell at me. Before you yell at me.
I'm not going to yell at
before,
you.
Can you promise me that?
No.
Mike?
Promise
me.
No.
And I'm not going to say anything.
All right, fine.
Then I'm going to do your silent treatment.
No.
Don't you dare. I'll just not say a word for 5 minutes.
I only say that for good reason. Okay. Trust me.
Do you buy any of Pete's mind? It's a mindset.
Yes.
That you'll hear competitors and athletes in basketball, in pitching, and in football say, I want a mindset to be aggressive. I am not going to let them tee off on us. On the road, Von Miller, 80,000 people. We're going to go in and we're going to hard play past the first play of the game, and we are going to tell them we're not going to just line up and be targets.
Yeah, I know. Except you do that all the time. You do that way too often.
Well, then Pete's hormonal, okay? Tell him to stop being so aggressive.
Well, you can't be both. You can't do that and be the physical running team that you say you want to be. All right, 206-421-3776. Taylor is in Tacoma. Taylor, what'd you learn this weekend?
What's up, T-Town?
I learned that, you know, this season, I think everyone in the NFL has learned to be a Browns fan. And I think we've also learned what it feels like to be a Browns fan, and that they found another way to lose again. And I just think it's
they didn't lose.
Or they, I mean, they didn't win.
But they didn't lose.
But they didn't win.
All right, but you said they found another way to lose, and they didn't lose.
Okay. But, I mean, they didn't win.
Okay.
Thank you, Taylor. You stay strong.
If you're not first, you're last.
We all wanted him to. We all wanted Baker to come in the fourth quarter. We were all saying it. We were wishing it. I mean, it would have been heroic.
What?
He wouldn't come in.
Yep. I didn't want that. I wanted Tyrod Taylor to do his thing.
But Taylor, you're right.
No. If you want, you know, NFL to be better, you have the number one draft pick come in and be the savior for a team.
Dude, Taylor's not taking
it. Is Taylor going in the top five? Like, he keeps this up. And you're very argumentative,
and
Taylor.
Been
I like
the greatest
it.
Thing. I mean, everyone would have wanted it. I mean, that would have been awesome.
Taylor, you know what you're doing right now, man? You're sticking to the plan, right? You're not letting this guy bulldoze you. I love it.
I'm not the Seahawks, that's for sure.
Congratulations. You've made the top.
Oh, wow. Out of nowhere, Taylor. Are you a first-time caller?
No, I've called before.
No, I don't think so. I would have remembered.
Like about 5 years ago, I mixed you up with Tom Wassel, and you called. And I called in, and you didn't like that.
Yeah, I don't. How could you blame me? That's rude. That's just straight rude, Taylor.
But I was younger then.
All right, that's my bad. I should have remembered 5 years ago when you called in. All right, you're in the top five, Taylor. Thank you for the call.
Well, thank you.
All right, there you go. Taylor's in the top five, bro.
Dude, what happened to Kendall? Kendall used to call every day.
Yeah, he does.
Day.
He calls out every day. I can't say
he
we take his call
every, day
every
and
single
Mike
day.
Mike doesn't put him on the air.
No, often I do, but not every day. Kendall's out of the number one spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think maybe
Roger
yeah.
back in.
I don't know. Huh? I don't know.
What do you want to do with
we're
that?
We're gonna have
board
to have
right
some
now.
Conversation.
Surely he's not gonna put Jesse and Bothell number one.
No, Jesse's probably out of the top five. Get Jesse out of here. We don't need him. Move Kendall down to three. Get Jesse out. Jesse doesn't know what he's doing.
How about this point? Is this a fair point to make of something I learned? Because I think this plays up to really something you do an awful lot, Salk, and that's early judgment. Not in a bad way. You're just like, that guy can play, that guy can't play. A number of these rookies and young players, you just know who has it. Chris Carson just had it last year. Will Disley just had it in that game. Michael Dixon just has it. And when these young guys come on, not perfect, and they're not going to be perfect, but you look at it and go, huh, that actually doesn't look like a counterfeit. Yeah. That looks like the real thing. And then on the other end of that, Jermaine Ifedi, Ariso Diambo, a Nick Vanette, and Amaro Darbo just never got it. And that initial impression, how powerful that just when you embed that, how powerful that can be.
It's funny. I mean, I had a similar kind of learning moment where I said this rookies are just a mixed bag, right? Sometimes you get Will Disley and sometimes you get Philip Lindsay, who are both great in their debuts on Sunday. And sometimes you get, unfortunately, Shaquem Griffin, who looked lost at times and really was a detriment, yep. had to be replaced by Austin Kalitro. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag anytime you're playing as many rookies as the Seahawks are going to try to play this year.
You know what
I learned? Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go.
I just had a hard time with those Earl comments afterwards. I'm glad Bob Gross and Tom spun it a different way. I just have a hard time with that. And I know I had the speaking engagement yesterday over at CenturyLink Field. It was awesome. It was really, really fun with the Comcast folks. But these comments, this was Earl post-game. This is just hard for me to absorb.
All I can do is just, you know, put the best product out there as possible, protect myself until I do get paid.
But you are getting paid $8.5 million. You are getting paid a lot of money. And the disrespect thing is hard for me because I just don't think this is a situation where the Seahawks...
Do you think the Seahawks should play the disrespect card and start crowing that Earl Thomas is disrespecting them by not living out his contract?
No, I don't think so.
I think they should.
I don't think so.
We're being disrespected by this player who just simply won't respect the fact that he's got a contract.
But so many of you, this relates to so many of you that are listening right now, okay? It just does. You know how? Your house. And when you tried to sell your house. My neighbors went, like, sold a month ago. It should sell. You're screwing this up to the real estate agent. You're screwing this up. No, I mean, we got a price right where it's at. This is what the market, but why isn't doing it? This is disrespectful. My house is phenomenal. Do you know the memories I've had in this house? My yard's better than that one. My house in this neighborhood is so much better than that. Yeah, but do you know what? The market is.
Yeah, wrong timing.
The market is willing to pay. So in every way, as a team guy, as a chemistry in a locker room guy, as a real estate market guy, that comment is just so hard for me to absorb.
206-421-3776. Daniel's in Seattle. Daniel, what'd you learn this weekend?
I learned that we need to sign KJ Wright. We really missed that guy.
Interesting.
They sure did seem like they missed him. As for signing him, I don't know. I mean, there's two ways to get that production. One is to get KJ Wright back. One is to spend some other resources on another player who's, you know, a higher draft pick or higher thought of or whatever, has more experience. But I think your point's still well taken. Without KJ Wright in there, that defense looked different.
Yes, and it has for the years when he or Bobby have gone out. If you want to talk about the number difference with Earl or not Earl or Cam or without Cam, go look at the linebackers. Go look at the games played for these Seahawks halves played when there's no Bobby or KJ, or they're even missing one of them. It is startling. Mm. Startling. Now, I would say this to you, Daniel. You realize the Seahawks have more money on their injured reserve than any other team in this league, that they're paying 20.
Of Cam, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, because of Cam and others and injury settlements.
Yeah.
And and because of Clip. Like, yeah, they've
some
got
of that is older guys that you gave third contracts to.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what Earl wants?
Third contract.
Earl wants what Cam's got, that if I get hurt, you're still going to pay me 10+ million bucks.
No, thanks.
And
I don't want to do that again.
KJ, unfortunately, has now recurring knee injuries the last couple years that you just got to be careful with assets that get old in this league really fast, unfortunately.
A couple other things we learned this weekend. I learned the Seahawks might have a pass rush problem. But I'm going to reserve judgment on that until they play somewhere other than Denver. And not just because of Denver's offensive line. I don't know that that's necessarily incredible. But I do think that the heat and the altitude, you heard Pete mention, guys were throwing up, and we know what kind of a problem it will be. I want to see what it looks like in a different environment before I declare that to be the case. But it's certainly on your tooth watch list, man. Like, they didn't rush the passer. They had one sack. Did they have any hurries? Maybe one more hurry?
Don't fall into the trap with the dental stuff, Mike.
I'm sorry. It's my bad.
Can you just do me a favor?
No. What?
Never mind.
What is it?
Just don't use the word declare. Because every time you
Because of the
declare,
prima nocta?
Yes. I just think,
you just
of,
think of Braveheart?
No. Oh. You and your nerds down there at Pomona where you guys did that too.
Well,
all right?
Come on. It's not nice. We'd never do that. It's disgusting.
Just don't say the word declare, all right?
Well, I may have to.
Do you know how many other teams got one or zero sacks out there? Pass rush pretty hard in this league.
Stop telling me that. I don't care. What do I care about those teams?
This segment is not just about the Seahawks.
I know that,
the NFL.
But like, that doesn't make me feel better. Go rush the passer. Did you watch the game? Did the Seahawks get any pressure on Case Keenum, or did he have all day to sit back there and do whatever he wanted unless they brought a corner blitz?
Yeah. He had quite a bit of time.
You're going to rush the passer, but maybe it's the altitude and the exhaustion.
And Deion Jordan's going to play hopefully more than 14 snaps.
So it could get better. Yes. How about the weaponry problem? That's another quick observation. Did the Seahawks have a weaponry problem? I think they might, especially with Doug Baldwin out for a little while. Do they have enough weapons?
Dude, well, this is your big play receiver, baby. What?
Do they have enough weapons?
No.
Okay.
Look around this league, man. Oh, I can't do that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to look around the league. Yes, they've got weaponry problems. Mm. Yeah, Brandon is not a hyper-explosive guy. David Moore is still a young player. Jerron Brown doesn't play as fast as his speed. Nick Vannett has never played as fast as his speed. Tyler Lockett showed you. He's got the juice. What a beautiful route.
He's got to be.
And a beautiful concept,
He's got to be a weapon.
Yes, he does.
He really does. Text message. I learned we still have a kicker problem.
True.
Yeah, you might.
True.
Sure might. You got to go one more week before you totally, buy into that, though, right? You got to go at least a little longer.
I didn't realize. They didn't do this or portray this on the broadcast, and listening to everybody, they should have. The clouds came rolling in, and the winds really picked up. It cooled things down, but on the other side of that, and I went back and watched Janikowski's kicks. Did you just see it? I mean, it just, in that wind, it just took off. So that's an excuse
and
explanation.
Didn't seem to bother McManus.
Too hot, too much altitude, windy.
Didn't bother McManus. Sorry.
Okay.
Brandon's in Phoenix. What up, Brandon? What'd you learn?
Good morning, Brandon.
Morning.
What'd you learn, buddy?
I learned that we're going to be better, I think, than the national narrative or that I even thought we were going to be.
Really? Okay. You come out of that game with that positive spin. Why?
I thought we moved the ball fairly well. I mean, there were the big plays, but I think that there's room when we get DJ Fluker back for the run game to pick off. I think it was a real feeling out game, and I came out of it encouraged, feeling like we see some of the problems, but they're fixable.
Appreciate it, Brandon.
Love it. Let's grab Miguel, who's in Bothell. Miguel, what'd you learn this week?
I learned that Khalil Mack is going to destroy our offensive line.
Well, that's not a very positive
take. Those calls back to back? I love it. You think so, Miguel? You think he's pretty good?
Yeah. Did you watch that game against Green Bay?
No,
Mike doesn't allow me to talk about anybody else in the league. He wants me to only focus on the Seahawks.
Not what I said. Miguel. I said that when we're talking about the Seahawks, you can't just bring, neither did Detroit. Like, so what? They're going to play Chicago on Monday night.
Miguel,
yes, you can talk about
Miguel,
that game.
Do you ever feel bad for me listening to the show?
Oh, my God.
Mike tries to dictate.
I was home yesterday listening, and I felt so bad for you. I was just listening. I was thinking, Brock, I feel so bad for you.
Howdy.
Thanks, Howdy.
Go back home. Go climb Rainier again.
Thanks, Miguel.
What's the next caller have to say?
Can I tell you a funny little story? Scott Frost was saying in our production meeting, he goes, I got the job here, and people would write me nice cards, like all these Nebraska folks. Like, what's it like being back? He's like, it was amazing. This guy sent me $20, And he wrote me in a card like, this is just for your moving costs. You know, I know it's very expensive to move, and we're so thankful to have you here.
Funny.
It was so funny. So
we all got to do our part. Every little right. bit counts.
It's yes. very nice. Yes. It
takes a village.
Hey, that was kind of fun. I like that. We have some more people on hold, but we're going to get to around the NFL here in a few minutes. Fun to maybe we'll do some more of that, what we learned on Tuesdays.
I like that.
Just a moment or two, Brock. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this today, but it is September 11th. It was 17 years ago today that you know, our country was just rocked by what happened with those four planes and the act of terror on that day. I know we've talked about this before, but I'll ask you again. Where were you and what was it like?
Yeah, I was at home. And I'll tell you, I'll play off this segment a little bit. What did I learn? And I said this yesterday to this group. I learned I'm a team guy. I'm not a lone wolf, and I can't do it alone. And that day, I learned that as much as anything. You know, I was with the Seahawks at that point. Woke up to a phone call from Damon, who was with the Patriots, at 5 a.m. Like, are you watching this? Right? Just startled out of bed. No, what? Turn on the TV. And really, from that moment forward, I'm getting goosebumps right now. My hairs are standing up because I've always known I'm a team guy in the middle of my family and the son of a coach and around, you know, teams my entire life. But that day just reinforced that more than ever.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I had a similar experience being on the West Coast. I was in L.A. and got a call from my dad saying, are you watching? You're watching? No, what are you talking about? We're under attack. I was like, what? Mm. And just that phrase made me think that there were, you know, missiles in the air reading Tom Brokaw and some others. I mean, one of the great things about or awful things, but things that was so powerful about that day was not understanding or knowing how big it went.
Right.
It was similar for me in the Boston bombing when I was there for the on the air during the marathon thing. And there were these reports coming out saying, well, there may be more bombs under bridges and this, and you just don't know how much bigger it's going to be. Well, it was big enough in both cases and just absolutely truly horrible day. And
I don't mean to make that day like what I learned about me, because that day was not anything about me other than just the team environment, other than the players and wives. And we had, I don't know, 20 folks over at our house that night as we all were just around, how you just needed the people around you. I was reading, you know, lots of things this morning on Twitter and the people that lined up in those streets to give blood that day, that just win this, you know.
Yeah, there was an incredible sense of community,
community
that took
and
place
team
in this country for a short while. And anyway, it's been 17 years. Does it feel like it's been 17 years?
Sometimes it does.
Yeah.
And then I guess when this day happens, it doesn't. You know, sometimes it does.
It just sounds so. It feels so real and clear in my memory, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that.
No,
thinking back and people you may have known who are in that area. I have a good friend who was late to work that day. Thankfully, he worked in the Twin Towers and is alive because of it, or potentially alive because of it. So, an incredibly powerful, awful, scary day. Just a good day to remember what it felt like. All right. Coming up next, Brock, we're going to buzz around the NFL as we do every Tuesday at 8:30. What did we make of the NFC West? Well, we'll figure that out together next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, Brock and Salk, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. A couple of interesting text messages here, just based on our quick conversation there about September 11th. I was at the Pentagon. Guys, it was a horrific experience, very profound. I saw a similar thing last year in DuPont when the Amtrak train crashed. Yeah, it was a crazy scene as well. Tex, good call on the team thing, Brock. I was sitting in front of a radar scope controlling the morning rush out of the Seattle-Portland-Eugene area. We air traffic controllers across the nation became one huge team that day. Wow. I mean, I can only imagine what that must have been like. Imagine being an air traffic controller on that day. Mm-mm. That is something I've never thought of in 17 years. That is a really, really scary and unimaginable profession to have had that day.
Yeah, I'm going to imagine that day brought a lot of people together in ways 17 years later, 20 years later, 30, 40 years later, they will never forget.
Yeah, that's definitely a truism and a great way of looking at it. All right, now that we have week one of the NFL in the books, let's take our quick buzz around the NFL.
Bears, Packers.
Rodgers, surveying, fires, that's caught.
We're going to see both those teams this year, right?
Yep. NFC North.
What'd you learn?
Going to see the Bears on Monday. I'm going to learn that when it gets to its biggest moments right there and the stage gets the biggest, that having that experience of doing it before and believing. Michelle Tafoya asked him, asked Aaron Rodgers after the game, how'd that happen? He said, because in the locker room, I said, we're going to win. It reminded me of Aaron, of Russell Wilson against Green Bay in that NFC Championship game. Like, you just have a true belief we're going to do it. And the Bears don't. The Bears don't. The Bears, none of those guys on defense, when they went on that field, believed they were going to stop Aaron Rodgers. They could try to fake it. Maybe Khalil Mack did. Maybe there's some good players on that team, but they don't have that just built-in belief because they've never done it.
The Bears are such a funny historical franchise because they're one of the blue blood old programs in the NFL. They had arguably, not even, almost inarguably, the best defense of all time in the 1985 Bears and one of the most dominant Super Bowl champions we've ever seen. They've been to a couple other Super Bowls, and other than that, they have one of the they're like the Lions.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, they're awful.
Yeah.
The quarterback Browns. Issues, and yes. Just they're a complete
they
disaster
ways to lose.
Of a franchise, yeah. Other than like having the greatest team of all
Correct.
Time.
Correct.
It is such a strange history for an organization.
Correct.
And I don't know whether what happened in 1983 or 1991 or whatever has any effect on the 2018
Bears. But it's
weird,
that culture.
It is true.
When ownership is there, and that culture has just felt that for so long. And, you know, frankly, the baseball team in this town has to get over that because they are the equivalent of some of these teams in football now with their just drought of playoffs. And it's just like, I know this shouldn't have any effect whatsoever. Totally different players, new regime and everything. But just in the fiber of some of these organizations are ways to lose. I'll say this as well, something you maybe have never thought of before, and it just hit my mind, is that baseball players have an MCL sprain, pitchers are done. They have a groin strain, they're done. They have a back strain, they're done. Anything. You just can't throw a projectile, a baseball, 97 miles an hour and put the force throwing downhill on a mound. You can't do it. Or you're going to tear your shoulder and arm and just put that in harm's way. You have an MCL. You're throwing 60-yard bombs on one leg. You can get away with it with a football.
It's weird that that's the case. I mean, I don't think it's a toughness thing.
No, it's just heavier. It just doesn't put the burden on the rest of the body like pitching on a mound and throwing a little seed does.
It's also true. I mean, the other part of it, though, is the discrepancy between Aaron Rodgers at 50% and the guy below him is significant so that he can't come out. On the other hand, if James Paxton isn't 100% and is throwing 91 instead of 96, well, the difference then between him and the guy, like, you'd rather have the next guy up even if he's not as good a pitcher healthy. So, interesting. Aaron Rodgers also tried to lose that game. He could talk about how he said they were going to win it all.
Threw
it
right
once.
To Kyle.
Threw it right to Kyle.
Aaron Rodgers, as far as just a pure thrower, in your lifetime, and I'm speaking to all you guys out there, on Tex Toy and Kyle and Howdy, Lydia, so I'm talking just as a thrower of a football. Has there ever been anyone that you watch you said,
Marino.
Yeah, he throws it better? Marino?
I think so.
Okay.
Maybe Elway, but Marino would be the name for me.
Not to me. There's not a spot on the field or a situation on the field where I don't think he can throw a perfect pass.
Yeah, the thing that separates him from Marino in my mind is a movement.
Yeah, that's true.
He's like Marino in the pocket, you're right, unbelievable.
Marino in the pocket was insane.
But Aaron can do just about that and then everything else
on
top
of it. Yeah,
that's true. It's ridiculous.
He's the best. He's arguably the best quarterback we've ever seen.
Junior college transfer, just ridiculous.
49ers, Vikings.
Garoppolo takes the snap. Looking, throws deep down the middle, intercepted by Harrison Smith at the 20, running to the near side. Harrison Smith is going to be tackled just shy of the 15. Garoppolo's third interception of the day.
And that was the worst one.
GQ Jimmy G had his chance, got the ball late. What'd he do? Threw a pick. First loss as a starter.
Yep. I'll tell you, I said earlier the Seahawks, the most banged up team in the NFL heading in. That's probably inaccurate. San Francisco's right there. And they lost Jerick McKinnon, their running back, to an ACL. That was their guy. I mean, that was their just running back force to really complement everything Shanahan wants to do, to catch out of the backfield, to do everything. They got other pieces, but nothing like the threat that he would be.
Do you, let's just take a look. I mean, we're going to see both these teams again this year also, right? You see the Niners twice. We're going to see Minnesota later in the year. Jimmy Garoppolo, 15 of 33 for 261, a touchdown and three picks in that game.
Yeah.
Quarterback rating of 45. Sacked three times for 24 yards. I mean, he didn't have a good day at all.
No, he needs help. You know, he needs some help around him. He needs some semblance of a run game. Now, you know, that was a little evidence. In the league overall, too, I should have said this. High risk, high reward. The most picks, I believe, ever on an opening weekend, 33 picks around the league. On average, over two a game.
Strange.
And you saw it, though. You saw people taking shots. Case Keenum against the Seahawks taking shots down the field. San Francisco taking their shots last night in that game. Derek Carr didn't do a ton of it. Certainly Goff did, just taking your shots down the field. Felt an awful lot of that. And Garoppolo does bring that element to the 49ers.
Rams, Raiders.
Testing the middle and getting a push right through.
Rams and Raiders last night. It was a good game for, what, 2.5 quarters, almost three, and then the Rams just blew it open late. I know everyone's going to say that the Rams are great. They are a really good team, and they're probably going to win at least 10 or 11 games this year, maybe even 12 or 13. I also think they're mortal, and they're not quite as perfect as they're cracked up to be. I thought you saw Oakland play with them for a while until they just unfortunately made too many mistakes, and Oakland's a flawed franchise.
Rams O-line is good, man. They're really good. That's the hardest thing about it. Like, you can predict all these other things and say this or that.
How do they have cap room for all this?
Well, after this season, as Clayton has said a bunch of times, that will come to roost. Is that the right way to say that?
Chickens will come home to roost.
Yes, and yeah. They're having to pay these O-linemen and pay Jared Goff, and it's going to, you know, they paid Aaron Donald, obviously, the big, huge money. So, but this season, my gosh, those are a bunch of grown men. Mm. And Andrew Whitfield, or Andrew... left tackle, Andrew
Whitworth.
Whitworth. Oh, you mean my guy?
Yeah, yeah. Mic'd up last night.
Compounded spine, I believe.
Just mic'd up and just a grown, stinking man.
Yeah.
And they got a bunch of them.
You still don't think the Seahawks should have signed him in the offseason?
He's got a compressed spine.
Right, so I know. So he just can't play. Is that right?
At $14 million, that seemed a little rich for me, right. But it's not been for them. They made it work, and that to me is the scariest thing. In this division, that's the scariest thing about that group. They manhandled and mauled you last year. And you may be even thinner in your front seven this year, and all of those guys are back.
What you make of the, again, we're going to see both those teams this year as well, as they're going to play the Raiders in London. Raiders scary?
Just volatile. They just feel
all over the map, right?
Yes.
Do you think this is going to work out for Gruden?
I think he'll have a different GM at some point.
Yeah.
I think Reggie
just
McKenzie,
who fits
him. Who, by the way, drafted Khalil Mack and Derek Carr and Amari Cooper and a bunch of really nice pieces.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll come here and hang out with his buddy John Schneider for a while.
12-win season just a couple years ago. I think he eventually is just going to be the scapegoat, and it's going to be the $100 million man show.
All right, there you go. There's our look around the NFL every Tuesday at 8:30. Tomorrow at this time will be Washington Wednesday. 8:30, Washington Wednesday. Brock will have some thoughts on what's going on with the Huskies, who fell to number 10 in the polls, just flip-flop with Stanford. Otherwise, anything else jump out to you in the NFL? Hey, Kyle, you're a uniform guy like me, right? You like to kind of see what's going on with the uniforms. Bengals and Jags both wearing slightly different uniforms this year. Is that right? That's what
The Jags, they definitely changed their helmet.
And the
uniforms. Jerseys, they were just simple.
They were real
sleek.
And the Bengals like are wearing almost exactly the same thing, white with just like a black number.
Yep.
I thought both looked good, like at least Tennessee in white.
That seems to be the trend.
I like it, man. I am all in on that. That's what I want the Mariners to do with the thing they did years ago from the Negro Leagues.
I think the Mariners need to seriously reconsider a branding.
Yes.
I'm dead serious about that. And we're not going to talk about
them. I'm not doing this until they're eliminated.
I'm not putting that name in your mouth.
Not until they're eliminated.
We're going to have to talk with Passan about them.
That's fine. But I'm not doing the full conversation.
But they need a reboot badly.
Yeah.
Just a brand reboot.
I'm going to tend to get there at some point. Yep. Anyway, both the Bengals and Jaguars look pretty good. I'd be curious to see what the dark-colored uniforms look like for both of them. All right. Speaking of the Mariners, you're going to take on the Padres tonight, 7:10 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We will talk to Jeff Passan, everyone's favorite wet blanket, coming up in 20 minutes right after good news, bad news, no news, and the real meaning of a grade 2 MCL tear. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news, bad news, no news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Hey, we're going to talk to Jeff Passan here in 15 minutes as we mourn what is soon to be the end of this Mariners season. Started off with such great promises.
You have to.
Talk to Jeff.
Like, not a Jeff thing. I love Jeff.
You don't have to.
I mean, do we have to?
I mean, we kind of have to.
This is going to be it, though, right?
What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Doug Baldwin has a grade 2 MCL tear.
Yeah, that's too bad. Bad news. And as Salk said this morning to lead off the show, or need to know as we were talking about, and that's both knees. Like, you got to compensate. You got one. You got a problem. As Doug said, he's going to play at 85% the entire season on his other knee. So whether that's cartilage or bone on bone or who knows what's developing, that issue there, and now you're going to compound that by having another one. It's like Russell when he had his grade 1 MCL, the worst of them all, and a high ankle sprain that he had to gut through. You do it as a quarterback, it's really difficult to do as a receiver.
Yeah, Doug's a tough dude, but that's both knees, and it's bad news. I mean, obviously, it could be worse news. He could be out for the season. But having to play wide receiver and with his ability to get off the ball and all the things that quickness mean to Doug Baldwin, yeah. I think it's going to be a challenge for him to have a typical Doug Baldwin year playing with two different knee injuries, one on each leg. So, yeah, bad news, no doubt. Especially because it's not a team with a ton of weaponry.
Yeah, and you know who
they're not
needs,
loaded at the wide receiver spot where next guy up just comes right in.
You know
we'll
who
see.
Needs Doug right there with Russell Wilson as much as anybody on this roster? Jermaine Ifedi. He needs Doug Baldwin.
And yeah, someone Russell can trust to get the ball out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Rays are now tied with the Mariners in the wild card standings.
By the way, did you see Homeboy's game-winning home run, former Mariner last night? Did you watch that?
G-Man Choi?
Did you watch
him? I did.
Yeah. Bro, he went
nuts. The fist pump, the whole deal.
Stare down, yeah. Tiger Woods fist pump,
yep.
Fernando Rodney, bow and arrow.
Yes, it was nuts.
He unloaded all of them.
Yeah. Were we down there when he got injured?
When did we trade him?
Oh, after he broke his leg and was never going to play again?
Oh, okay.
You remember when, weren't we there in spring training?
Yeah.
He jumped up for the ball, yes. Came down on first base awkwardly.
Yep.
It was like, that guy's never going to play baseball again.
And he did.
Yeah, he had a pretty good play. Yeah, all right.
Can I spin that as good news for baseball, though?
For what?
That a team that's the most innovative, creative, that is testing the boundaries. We'll talk to Paston about this. Can I spin that as possible
good
news?
Because like 3 weeks ago, he was like kind of making fun of like, oh, I had a GM text me asking if the Rays of all teams were going to catch the Mariners.
I don't know how I'm going to talk to Paston. I'm really having trouble to even,
didn't
like,
even make it to mid-September.
I can't even answer your good news, bad news, no news questions about the Mariners. What? I don't know how this conversation is going to go.
Should we have Lydia do the interview?
You might have to.
This Salk has yet to reach his breaking point where he's really kind of had his
Lydia,
his
why
moment.
Don't you come in? We'll let Salk run the board. You come
that'll
in
go
for the,
well.
For the Paston interview.
So what you're saying is you don't want us to be on the air.
Bad news next.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Pete Carroll said yesterday on with you guys that KJ Wright returning this week would be, quote, miraculous.
Yeah, bad news too. I don't like that. That was a scope that maybe he was going to be back for the opener. Nope. Now, miraculous to be back week two. It's one of those. It's a scope because it's a 4-week injury. And maybe he'll be back realistically for the Dallas or the game after that. And that's a bummer, man. This team needs him. This team was already just razor thin, 25 through 53. So your top 22 got to go. Mm. And without KJ, Bobby is still elite, but Bobby's even better when that guy's next to him.
This is even more challenging. It's bad news. No Doug Baldwin, no KJ Wright. I mean, you only have so many name brand players on this team, and there are two of them. How many real name brand players are on this team? Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas right now, Doug Baldwin, KJ Wright.
Ethan Posick.
I mean, those are your name brand guys. Shaquille Griffin might be there. He's getting there anyway. Chris Carson may have that level of ability. I don't know that we've fully seen it from him yet. So Tyler Lockett's got a little bit of name brand to him, but you're missing two of your better guys.
There were a couple
news.
Dudes suited up Sunday on the sidelines. I didn't even know who they were.
Stop.
I was like, who is that? Where did that guy come from?
You did. That's not true.
That's 1,000% true.
Akeem King?
Some linebacker.
Brock, you call the preseason
no,
games.
That guy was not on the roster 2 weeks ago,
that.
Bro.
Maybe it's the guy who was playing third base for the Mariners the other day. Have you ever heard of that guy? Chris something?
Who?
Who made like an otherworldly catch?
What's his name?
Oh, it was incredible.
Chris. It's Chris with a K.
My dad knew it instantly. And I was like, how do you know this, Ricardo?
They put him in there. I was like, never heard of this guy. No idea how they acquired him. I had to Google him just to find out like where he came from, Cincinnati or something. Like, never heard his name.
Good news, bad news, no news.
First-year NFL head coaches went 0-7 in week one.
Oh, interesting. Huh. There's a dearth of coaching, man. It's one of the conversations. It's bad news for the Seahawks because eventually Pete Carroll is going to end up moving on. It may not be this year, may not be next year, may not be for 3 or 4, but it is really hard to find a high-quality head coach in the NFL. And if Pete is actually going to be out sooner rather than later, I do not think he is. I don't think so at all. Finding the next NFL head coach is incredibly difficult.
Yep. Really, really hard.
0-7. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that includes Nagy, who, I mean, you're up 20-0 in Green Bay. Okay. There's a couple
kind
of crazy ones. But for the Seahawks, that's largely no news. Okay. Do you know who Brandon Grace is?
Brandon Grace?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, who is he?
The golfer?
Nope.
Brandon Grace is a golfer.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. He's a guy who went into the railroad tracks on 16.
My bad. Do you know who Jermaine Grace is? Do you know who Jermaine Grace is?
Ah, that's a linebacker.
Who's Jermaine Grace?
The linebacker out of Arkansas State.
What number does he wear for your Seahawks?
Number 56.
Close. 52.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's like Pepper Johnson. Who else you got?
Grace.
Yeah.
Give me Grace.
Brandon Grace. I absolutely know who Brandon Grace was. He was right there with Spieth and DJ down the stretch in the U.S. Open.
Okay.
He gave it up late, though.
Oh, that's South African?
Yeah, he's the guy who went into the railroad tracks. And see you later.
The train on 16.
Say goodnight, Gracie. Yeah, 16. Tough one. That's going to pretty much do it for him. And thanks for playing there, Brandon. All right.
How are you going to do that?
I don't know. I'm thinking of not talking. Will you do the interview?
You're going to go Jason Witten on me?
I may. I'm going to not say anything. Right. Jeff Passan joins us next. Everybody ready to take their medicine together? Let's do it. It's Brock and Salk.